On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The U.S. is pushing plans to build a new missile defense system on old Soviet turf, and Moscow is fighting mad about it. Suddenly, in 2007, the language sounds straight out of the Cold War. Talk of imperialism and dictatorship, first strike, second strike. In a week of gripping and grinning at the G8 summit, Russian President Vladimir Putin has not been smiling much. If the U.S. doesn't reconsider its position, he says, we won't be responsible for a new arms race. And here's George Bush yesterday telling reporters that old Vladimir, the Russians, and everyone else should settle down.
They're not a military threat. They're not something that we ought to be, hyperventilating about.
This hour on Point, the U.S. and Russia nose to nose again and talk of a new Cold War. Of course, President Bush and Vladimir Putin meeting today in Heiligendamm, Germany, at the G8 summit there. We're going to look in on that if we can, and we will hear later in this hour from the U.S. ambassador, former U.S. ambassador to Russia from 93 to 96. But joining me right now from Washington is Gregory Webb. He's editor of Security Newswire, a newsletter funded by former Senator Sam Nunn's organization, the Nuclear Threat Initiative. Gregory Webb, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Help us understand exactly what it is that the Bush administration is pushing in terms of missile defense on the perimeter of Russia.
The United States is seeking to deploy 10 missile interceptors, which it would base in Poland, and a missile tracking and guiding radar in the Czech Republic. It's a limited system, only 10 interceptors that the Bush administration says is intended to shoot down Iranian missiles should Iran develop long-range missile capabilities in the next several years.
Now, this is only possible, as I understand it, because the U.S. pulled out in 2002. The Bush administration pulled the U.S. out of the ABM Treaty, the 1972 Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. Is that correct?
That's exactly correct. The ABM Treaty explicitly prohibited the deployment of missile defenses outside U.S. territory and outside Soviet territory. In addition, there were arcane rules about where radars and interceptors could be located within their territories, whether these systems could be tested. All of that has been tossed by the wayside, which has freed the United States to test missile interceptors and to seek to deploy them outside U.S. territory. And Russian concerns in 2002 about the U.S. withdrawal are appearing to be borne out now.
Now, traditionally, and this is kind of a deja vu, strange feeling to even be talking about this stuff, but traditionally it was important where these defenses were. Why? Because of the big nuclear standoff between the United States and the USSR, right? They didn't want the defenses so far forward that if a country was attacked, it wouldn't have time to respond. Is that it?
Well, the intent of the ABM Treaty was to prevent the nations from deploying national missile defenses or systems that could protect the whole country. The idea was to allow the idea of deterrence to continue, that each nation would maintain the ability to destroy the other, if you will.
So that mutually assured destruction, that horrible old phrase, would keep everybody's missiles in their silos.
That's right. And if one nation were to develop an effective defense and deploy it on a national basis to defend their entire territory, then that would mean that they might be able to survive a nuclear strike. And it might therefore mean that they might have a little more incentive to launch a first strike against their adversary, knowing that they might survive any retaliation.
So now the Cold War is long over. A lot of those stocks, though, by no means all of them, are off the table of nuclear weapons. At this point, I mean, this is a personal judgment, I guess, and we'll hear from a Russian perspective. But in your view, is Moscow justified in feeling upset by a missile defense system on its doorstep, practically, that is said to be aimed at Iran or maybe North Korea?
Well, certainly 10 missile interceptors are not going to affect Russia's strategic deterrent. Russia has thousands of nuclear warheads that it can use to deter the United States if it feels it needs to, and these 10 weapons are not going to affect Russia's military power in any way.
In other words, God forbid, if they should unleash this stuff, that they'd have thousands of missiles. These 10 little missiles would have no hope of stopping them. So what's the big deal?
I think the big deal is that it could be perceived as the proverbial camel's nose under the tent, that should this be accepted in Eastern Europe and by other nations near Russia, we could see more of this in the future. And I think there have been some indications in Washington that the Bush administration would like to see more missile defense installations deployed overseas. And so this is just, I think Russia's concerned that they want to stop this now rather than see the continuing development and deployment of U.S. missile defenses around the world.
Let's look at Washington's motives here for a moment then, if we could, Gregory Webb. Some simple questions. First of all, this is not Star Wars. This is not something, you know, going up in space. This is more like, what, the Patriot missiles that were put in Israel during the Gulf War? Or how would you describe this, this system?
That's a good description. These systems are ground-based systems. The interceptors and the radar guidance systems are all on the ground. The Star Wars or the Strategic Defense Initiative is...
Ronald Reagan had it.
By the Reagan administration included a huge space-based element. It called for thousands of orbiting satellites that would be able to destroy the entire Russian ballistic missile fleet. Probably a bit unrealistic. This is a more literally down-to-earth compromise from those originally ambitious plans.
Is it more realistic? Is it tested? Do we know if, I mean, it's not deployed. They haven't even poured concrete, though they seem eager to. But if deployed, is there reason to believe this would work against, let's say, hypothetically, an Iranian missile?
There's great debate about this. These systems are nascent technology, I'd say, very poorly tested so far. The version that they're talking about for Eastern Europe is a bit simpler than the one that we've deployed in Alaska, which is a three-stage missile interceptor. That has not been tested extensively. And the big fear among missile defense critics, I'd say, is that any nation capable of deploying a ballistic missile, should Iran achieve that ability with a long-range missile, should be able to deploy decoys on its missile so that it can conceal the warhead as it flies in space. This is done relatively simply, and instead of a single target that needs to be intercepted, any defensive system would need to discriminate from hundreds of targets to try to find the real warhead. Defeating these decoys has proven extremely difficult so far, and the United States has never tested the ability to do so.
So you don't have to have a Soviet or Russian-sized bed of missiles ready to go in order to maybe fly straight past this kind of defense. What about Vladimir Putin? He said not long ago, words to the effect of, you know, what is this, some kind of joke? They're rushing to put in these defenses, but Iran doesn't even have a missile, and yet they tell us doesn't have a nuclear capacity or the missile, I guess, that could hit Europe. So is this some kind of joke, he's asking? Does it look like a joke or reasonable to be pushing now?
Well, it's certainly not funny.
I don't mean a funny joke exactly, but you see what...
Iran has a ballistic missile arsenal. It appears to be developing longer-range missiles. It's very difficult to know how far along its long-range missiles are.
Is it believed they could hit Europe now? Do we know?
It could hit parts of Europe now, but Iran cannot threaten the major capitals in Europe at this point. U.S. intelligence estimates say that Iran is seeking that capability, and so they want to start deploying the missile defenses and developing the missile defenses now before it's too late, they say.
The Soviets, I nearly said, and we're back to the Cold War. The Russians, Moscow says Putin has now said that if this goes forward, they will retarget major European cities with their nuclear arsenal. We thought this was long behind us. Is that reasonable? Do you imagine somebody somewhere punching in new coordinates for Soviet nuclear missiles that will put Paris and London and Rome in there in those nuclear sites again?
Paris and London are almost certainly already in the codes as a Cold War artifact. I think the new targets will be these new missile interceptor sites in Eastern Europe, and this is one reason why the sites have been very unpopular domestically in Poland and the Czech Republic so far.
Does it look like they'll give the green light if President Bush wants to do this?
That's a judgment that's very difficult for me to make. These are governments that are very friendly to the United States, so I think there's a decent chance that they'll get government approval, but they'll still have to survive the domestic politics, and I think that part is very uncertain right now.
Gregory Webb, we're going to talk a lot about this hour, but let's just hear from you. There's the new Cold War phrase is put out there. I mean, the Cold War was very distinctive, a time in history, a huge conflict. I don't see those elements here, but is there something to be said about the Cold War in this, or is this a whole new kind of standoff?
Well, this is a different matter. While Putin's rhetoric is certainly ramped up in the last few weeks, I think we're still very, very distant from an era where these two massive nuclear arsenals were very close to being launched at each other. I think we're very far from that.
Gregory Webb, thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
We're looking this hour at Moscow and Washington, nose to nose again, and talk of a new Cold War. Certainly a lot of Cold War-style rhetoric around over missiles and power and more. On Sunday, Russian President Vladimir Putin said that unless the United States backs off, there will be a new arms race.
If this does not happen, then we will withdraw any responsibility for our retaliatory measures, because it wasn't us who initiated the new round of arms race development in Europe.
President Bush saying let's cool it today, but here he is earlier this week in Prague in advance of the G8 summit in Germany, saying Russia is headed in the wrong direction on democratic reforms.
And Russia, reforms that were once promised to empower citizens have been derailed, with troubling implications for democratic development.
Let me turn to my guest from Palo Alto, California. Michael McFaul is here. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, professor of political science at Stanford University, co-author of After the Collapse of Communism. Michael McFaul, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from Washington, Igor Zevolov. He is Washington bureau chief for the RIA Novosti, the Russian News and Information Agency. Igor Zevolov, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Let's get a Moscow perspective first. We heard President Bush talking this morning, and he said, I wonder how it sounded to your ears. He said, let's not all get excited about this. Russia isn't a military threat or enemy of the United States. Let's not hyperventilate about it. Almost said as though he was saying, let's not hyperventilate about Russia's anger.
Well, I think that we see certain difficulties in bilateral relationship today, but it's certainly not a new Cold War. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't be concerned about, heated rhetoric exchanges between the Russian and American side. But at the same time, I think there are a lot of areas of cooperation between the two countries.
Michael McFaul, I guess everybody's saying, look, let's get serious. It's not really a new Cold War here, but the rhetoric is awfully hot. Is this serious? Is this just a flash in the pan?
Well, it's not a new Cold War, because that would trivialize what was actually a hot war in which millions of people died. There was an ideological struggle.
Mm-hmm.
But this does signal to me the end of the post-Cold War period. And what do I mean by that? I mean that after the Cold War and in the beginning years of Gorbachev and throughout most of the 1990s, the central strategic objective in Moscow vis-a-vis the outside world was integration into the West.
Mm-hmm.
And that included also domestic reform, building of capitalist institutions, building of democratic institutions, and the West embraced that, not as strongly as we should have, but that was the main drama. Putin saying today, that's over. We're not interested in that. We're going our own way. We now see the world in zero-sum terms, and what I mean by that is if this is good for the U.S., we're going to be opposed to it. And that dynamic is a much more competitive dynamic than we had for the last 20 years. So this is a new phase in U.S.-Russian relations, and with Russia's relations with the West more generally. This is not just an American-Russian thing. This is Europe and the United States dealing with a different kind of Russia.
So you pull back the curtain, and there's a big context here, and we'll look at that. But let's go just for a moment to the missile defense system itself that President Bush is so eager to deploy in the Czech Republic and Poland. Is it reasonable, Michael McFaul, for the United States to put this, in effect, on Russia's doorstep? Is it reasonable for Moscow to be upset about it?
Well, we should have a bigger and more lengthy debate in our own country about whether this is the right thing to do. We should have had a longer set of negotiations with our European allies about this, and we should have been more diplomatic in dealing with Russia about this deployment, right? So the way that we rolled this out, I don't think was very useful. That said, this is not a threat to Russia. That I hear, I agree with my former Stanford colleague, Condoleezza Rice, who called this ridiculous, and Gregory, I think, really very forcefully explained why that's the case. This is not in any way a threat to Russia. But what Putin's doing is very clever. He's making this a debate in Europe. He's raising the specter, are you with us, are you with them? And it has stimulated debate in countries that are traditionally been rather pro-American. In the Czech Republic, it's a real debate. Poland less so. In Slovakia, a neighbor of the Czech Republic, it's a real debate. And so Putin is using this issue yet again as a wedge issue between the United States and Europe.
Igor Zavilov, how about it? It's your country. Do you see this as a threat to Russia? Is Vladimir Putin reasonable to raise holy hell about it?
I think there are two aspects of it. First, Russians are genuinely concerned about their security. And they, of course, understand that those 10 interceptors deployed in Poland is no threat to huge Russian arsenal. Mm. But at the same time, they may expect that there will be more of this in the future. And as President Putin said that, this plan is destroying the strategic equilibrium in the world. And in order to restore the balance, they want to test their new missiles. But this is one aspect of that, purely military and technical. There is also a political aspect in that. Russia was really upset about the way it was done. There were no consultations, and Russians were simply informed about American plans. And they think that in the area of strategic concerns and in the strategic area, there should be consultations first with Russia before adopting any plans. This is Russian position.
Michael McFaul, how about it? Of course, Vladimir Putin today in his meeting with President Bush is proposing alternate sites for a missile shield, as some are calling it, for Europe. The charge here is that Washington's been fast, high-handed, sort of just jammed this down Moscow's throat with no consultation. Do you see any sign that Washington would say, okay, let's rejigger the chessboard, let's look for alternates? Or when President Bush says, let's not hyperventilate, does he mean, Moscow, this is what we want to do, and you're just going to have to live with it?
Well, the Bush administration has a tendency towards making unilateral moves, and I agree with Igor that the way it was handled was not the most diplomatic of moves. And ideally, you know, I think we should go back to Ronald Reagan's idea. I don't say that very often, of working cooperatively with Russia to build missile defenses. If these are truly defensive weapon systems, as the president has emphasized, then there's no reason that we couldn't do this cooperatively with Russia. But that said, the Russian reaction, I think, is totally irresponsible. You know, you want to talk about irresponsible language, to threaten the Czech Republic and Poland by saying, we are now going to point our nuclear weapons at you for doing this. This is just, it's silly, it's ridiculous. I don't know of a single American, I don't know, maybe it's different out there on the East Coast, out here on the West Coast, there aren't many people walking around thinking that Russia is an enemy of the United States. So when people start talking about first strike and second strike capability,
which Russian generals have done in recent weeks.
Yeah, I mean, and I've been on radio programs with Russian officials in the last couple of days, where suddenly I feel like I'm back to the, you know, the 1980s, talking about throw weights and second strike capability. And this is just this. These are constructed threats. These are not real threats. And Putin has an agenda to do this right now. And I think that's what's disturbing.
But there remains, in a sense, of the question of who's pushing whom back on to that bonfire of rhetoric. Michael McFaul, Igor Zavalov, please stand by. I want to begin to bring our listeners in here from Moline, Illinois. David's calling. Hi, David. You're on the air. What do you think?
Thanks for having me. My thought is the way he worded it, it's like, you're not big enough for us to worry about you. We can beat you up. And this is kind
that is President Bush speaking there, you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of how he comes off to me anyway, anytime he has any diplomatic relationships with anybody. And it can be very dangerous to get the sleeping bear awoken again.
Yeah,
I'll take any comments off the air.
It's scary just to hear the rhetoric back. Igor Zavalov, what about it? Is it Russia's fault that we're back into this kind of exchange?
Well, Tom, let's face it. Of course, all these arms, nuclear arms issues were in the back burner of bilateral relationship for several years, but it doesn't mean that all those nuclear weapons simply disappeared. There are thousands of them on both sides. And the fact that political leaders did not talk much about first strike, second strike capability, credible deterrence, mutually assured destruction, it doesn't mean that the military on both sides, unfortunately, still think in those terms. And actually having all those nuclear weapons, this is their job, to think in those terms. What is troubling now, that those terms now reintroduced into political discourse. And this is, of course, very troubling.
Boy, and all of a sudden, there we are right back in the thick of it, and it's not a good feeling. Igor, please stand by. And Michael McFaul, I want to open the line for a moment here to former U.S. ambassador to Russia from 1993 to 1996, Thomas Pickering. He was earlier U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations under George H.W. Bush. Ambassador Pickering, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hello, Tom. Nice to be with you.
Michael McFaul says he sees in this the end of the post-Cold War period. Do you agree? And what kind of period are we walking into here?
I always tend to agree with Michael, though maybe a little premature at this point to take what I think is a dust-up design to try to build some leverage and call attention to an issue, play Russian domestic politics, perhaps beat up on the polls, which is always something the Russians like to do, and some genuine fear in the long run that this may be the basis for further expansion, and perhaps to drive some wedges, as Mike has so carefully stated, as well as build some serious leverage against the U.S. What one would hope is that this is, unfortunately, a part of a progression that can be turned around, and we've seen antecedents to this and other difficulties between the U.S. and Russia. One would hope that the president now and his statements and others can treat this as an opportunity rather than just a challenge. From my perspective, Mike is right. It sets the stage for a significant effort to perhaps even cut down on nuclear weapons and delivery vehicles, and that's an important opportunity. Now, that's very optimistic in the light of the present situation. I finally think that Putin and Bush seem to be able to get along pretty well together. The real problem is, can they hold that for a long period of time, and can they get that transmuted into their bureaucracies? These are all difficult questions. So short answer is, I don't think this is the beginning of a new era and the end of an old era yet. One would hope, however, that we would soon see an era where we can do a little more in cooperating with the Russians and a little less, perhaps, on both sides in making matters worse, which is certainly where we are now. And for this, I think Mr. Putin bears a significant share of responsibility.
Of course, Vladimir Putin headed to the United States, Maine, and the Bush family compound at Kennebunkport on July 1st. Wow, there will be a lot on the table at that meeting. Ambassador Pickering, do you think, Vladimir Putin is today suggesting, well, let's find alternate sites for these shields. I mean, how much do you think the United States is prepared to talk with Moscow, to dicker with Moscow, or Are they just going to say, you know, Vladimir, as George Bush likes to put it, this is simply what we're going to do and you've got to live with it?
Well, this is an administration known for its massive flexibility on these issues. On the other hand, I think it is worthwhile examining. If you would cast your mind back, conversations on this kind of subject began under Bush 1 and perhaps even before, and they were carried out under the Clinton administration. And the notion of involving a cooperative venture, which certainly both Secretary Gates and the President has put forward, should be in the context of some flexibility if indeed alternative sites would help to solve the problem on both sides. That is a win-win for both sides, and particularly if the polls and the checks are feeling under the gun literally now, maybe it is worth looking at. Maybe we'll have a better system, and maybe in the end U.S.-Russian cooperation can produce a win-win. Certainly we could benefit from information collected by Russian radars in terms of what we see as the looming danger in North Korea and Iran and perhaps elsewhere of proliferation bringing new threats to us.
It would be nice. Let's go to Jack in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Jack, you're on the air.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me. I have a quick question on one. Russia selling weapons to China and Chinese weapon systems in development, China being one of the biggest threats potentially. Potentially may not happen in the 21st century.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes. So what are you saying? Russia's the proliferator, not the U.S. with its...
Well, I'm just asking the questions of your esteemed panel. Russia has been selling weapons and advanced weaponry systems to China for the last 15 years, ostensibly for a monetary gain, but obviously strategically it helps them out in that it takes, you know, X amount of effort on our part to counteract that.
Yeah, let us pick it up. Our time is short before the break. On the other hand, Secretary of Defense Robert Gates has just recently been in China, talking about cooperating with the Chinese, maybe a kind of triangulation there if Russia is going to talk a more fierce line. Michael McFaul, who's the proliferator here? You know, should Putin look at himself?
Well, your caller's right. Russia sells arms to China and India and to Iran. I think they just passed us. Maybe I'm wrong about the Uyghur. We're the two. But it's, you know, they're our chief competitor. And I just point out to the caller that we're both in the business of selling arms abroad, and China is a Russia client. We don't sell to them, but we sell to other countries that Russia is threatened by.
And what about Ambassador Pickering's characterization of this as a dust-up in his hope of deep cooperation or more cooperation on the other side of it? Are you optimistic?
Well, I like Ambassador Pickering's idea of the Russians kicking some dirt and saying, hey, listen to us, we're back, we want to be taken seriously, and I do think that is what's happening. The tragedy of it for me is that it's in a coercive way, right? It's not saying we can help solve the Middle East peace process, we can help cooperate on this and that. The way we're going to get attention is by redirecting our nuclear weapons. I don't think that's a useful way, but maybe it does focus the mind. Most certainly the Bush administration has not had a lot of time devoted to the bilateral relationship. And I think this idea, I want to really emphasize it, that Ambassador Pickering brought up, of trying to go to way down in terms of our nuclear arsenals.
Mike is calling from West Newton, Massachusetts. Mike, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'd like to ask a question and take the answer off the air.
Mm-hmm.
Your guests seem to say this is a dust-up and much ado about nothing. I'm curious whether the Bush administration and your guests, in fact, would regard it as much ado about nothing if Putin were to place the same kind of supposedly trivial missiles in Venezuela or even Cuba. Okay, thank you. I'll take it.
There's a question. Michael McFaul, how about it? Reverse the equation. How would Washington like it?
Probably wouldn't like it. I agree with Mike. But the fact that we wouldn't, I think, has to do with something we haven't talked about, and I think we have to, which is what's going on inside Russia. You know, I don't know about your callers. I wonder what Mike thinks about France's nuclear weapons. My guess is nobody really thinks a big deal about that.
Right.
The British have nuclear weapons. Nobody's really concerned about that.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason we're not is that those are countries, those are democratic countries, those are countries that we have alliances with, And therefore, this, in other words, this is not just about capabilities. This is about perceived intentions. And in Russia, under Putin, Russia's gone from a partial democracy to an authoritarian regime in the last 6 years. And when that happens, I don't think it's an accident or just a coincidence that you have more tension between Russia today and the rest of the Western democratic world. And that, I think, when I think about why it's the end of the post-Cold War era, that's the dynamic that that I'm most concerned about.
Igor Zavalov, does that mean that, you know, if Russia just got its house in order, everybody would be better off here, that there's nothing to worry about from the American side? Vladimir Putin has made comparisons to Nazi Germany, talked about the U.S. as a new, you know, the new sort of supreme diktat in the world. Does Russia see the U.S. as benign?
Well, first of all, of course it would help if Russia consolidates its democracy. But at the same time, I do not believe that it will remove all the areas of disagreements between Russia and the United States. Disagreements over missile shield, over Kosovo, over Russian neighborhood, and so on. Right now, Russia has, I would say, a very complex view of the United States. On the one hand, of course, it is viewed as a very important partner in many areas in combating terrorism, proliferation of weapons of mass destruction. But at the same time, Russia views the United States as a superpower that wants to impose its will over the world. And the main aim of Putin's foreign policy for during last year, I believe, is the attempt to renegotiate Russia's relations with the West. According to the current Russian ruling elite, the relationship in the 90s was not equal, and Russia was treated as a student, and Putin wants to renegotiate it.
Ambassador Pickering, we've got word, of course, from the meeting of Vladimir Putin and George Bush. Putin saying, well, if you would relocate this system to Azerbaijan, then, you know, we might drop our objections. That confuses me. I mean, are they worried about this thing or not? If you just move it a little bit this way or that, I mean, if he's saying that, does it take away from the core kind of critique that Igor Zavalov is lofting here, that Russia feels kind of was put upon by Washington?
Well, Tom, that's exactly why I think that this has more of a characteristic of a dust-up than it does of a serious confrontation over serious issues. And I heard from Mr. Putin directly at the end of last year in a small meeting his sense of concern and grievance about the United States. It was clear that neither side is very good at listening to the other, and even worse, at taking into account what they hear. It seems to me, too, that this is not just all a question of diplomatic style. I think Mike is right that we have seen a serious slippage back in Russian partial democracy, which ought to be concerning, particularly in things like press freedoms, which were flowering for a while, not perfectly, but now seemingly have gotten back under the grip. The Azerbaijan idea is sort of interesting. Whether it works or not, I don't know, but it seems to me to be a pretty pale palliative for what it led Mr. Putin to do, which was to threaten grievous harm to Poland, the Czech Republic, and perhaps other central capitals in Western Europe. And so maybe by this more de minimis, low-key alternative suggestion, we get the Russians to begin to think more seriously about what we should be doing ahead. I think there are a wide range of areas, including, as we just talked about, serious nuclear disarmament, serious cooperation and nonproliferation, serious cooperation on the World Trade Organization membership for Russia, bringing them in, a serious effort to understand each other and our objectives and interests in common and different about the states of the former Soviet Union, what the Russians call the near abroad. These all present ripe opportunities for what I would call diplomatic advance, for a more positive effort. Rather than to continue to do more damage, we ought to have let's do no more damage as the next result of our conversations, and then we ought to try to find a way to try to build back together. This will never be a perfect relationship. We will never totally agree. Putin has grievances about the way the U.S. has acted. We have serious grievances about the way Putin has acted. It's time for serious people in serious countries to sit down and talk in a much more positive frame about how we can work on these rather than how we can make them worse. And you begin by not having a tin ear to each other.
Yeah, and of course, it's hardly getting better lately. But what about the fundamental dynamic here, Ambassador? We remember back in 1997, the great American diplomat late in his life, George Kennan, wrote that expanding NATO up near Russia's borders, in his words, would be the most fateful era of American policy in the entire post-Cold War era. He said it would inflame nationalism, anti-Western sentiment, militaristic tendencies in Russian opinion, which is kind of, it seems, what we're seeing now. Was George Kennan right? Did the West, the U.S., overplay its hand in pushing NATO closer to Russia?
Kennan is on record as having made a number of such statements. Some have been grievously wrong and some have right.
Yep.
I mean, I think that in effect what he was predicting was true, but what has happened in Russia, obviously, is that they have never in any way abandoned Soviet ideas about where the threat is coming from to them. We hear it in what Igor has had to say, a sense that they are living under serious danger, when in fact all of us on this side of the fence, as Mike McFaul has so clearly demonstrated, have no serious interest in a military confrontation with Russia, quite the opposite. And I think that unfortunately, in recent years, the style and the practice and the way of dealing with these problems, the lack of consultation on many of them, have led us to a position where, in fact, we have ended up both publicly and privately making matters worse rather than taking advantage of the opportunities, which I still believe are there. And I think that we're, in the long run, going to have to live with Russia. There is nothing that's chiseled in stone, even under the Soviets, in my view, that said that inevitably Russians and Americans must be in some kind of cataclysmic world conflict, a kind of Götterdämmerung, quite the opposite. We really have never fought each other, certainly not directly, we have plenty of opportunities to avoid that in the future.
Of course, but that kind of cooperative spirit, not much in evidence today, even with this meeting of Bush and Putin. Bush reportedly rejecting Putin's appeal for the missile defense system to be moved. It sounds maybe like more of the my way or the highway posture there. Brandon's calling from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Brandon, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Just a couple points I wanted to make. By putting in these missile defense systems in these other countries, it's already going to hurt our, you know, tattered reputation around the world. With, you know, these, Russia's going to then point their, you know, missiles at them countries, and who put the missile defenses there is us.
There certainly has been some sour response in Europe to the whole thing. Yeah. So what do you see, Brandon?
I'm sorry, what's that?
So where do you go with that?
Well, just saying, our reputation is already, you know, pretty low around the world. It's going to, I think, make matters worse by putting in these other countries and, you know, having the missiles pointed at these other countries.
But Bush would say, look, we're trying to defend Europe potentially from a nuclear threat one day from Iran.
Yes, but the other point I wanted to make was, Bush's, you know, greatest threat to us was terrorism. You know, why aren't we working on fighting terrorism than putting these huge missile defense systems where these other countries don't even have these missiles, like Iran and other countries?
That's an interesting point. Michael McFaul, it comes back to the issue of why is the U.S. pushing so hard right now on this when there may be more urgent terror threats to be dealt with, and Russia might be helpful in that.
Well, the caller is absolutely right. The real threats are more immediate threats are elsewhere. And we should be fighting terrorism and working with Russia where we can. I mean, the irony of your conversation about NATO 5 minutes ago is that NATO, for the first time, is being used in a military capacity in Afghanistan, fighting the very enemies that the Russians in the 1990s were encouraging us to take seriously.
And now they are.
So, again, this notion of kind of natural threats, I just don't buy. I mean, NATO right now is doing more for Russian national security in Afghanistan than threatening Russia. The notion of, 10,000 tanks rolling into Russia from Europe is just make-believe to me. Now, on the on the other part, I agree with the caller, and I think, you know, we should give Putin some credit that we're now having a more serious debate about ballistic missile defense in our country. We should debate the merits of this, and we should talk about the opportunity costs of doing this. I personally don't think the very modest system that is being talked about is in any way going to detract from our capabilities of fighting elsewhere. But, you know, that's a healthy debate. That's a debate we should have. We should not let Russia have veto power over what we do and do not do with, after all, countries that are American allies. Let's not forget that. Poland is a member of NATO. And so Russia, you know, to say, well, we're going to threaten so that you don't do something with your NATO ally and you have to do it elsewhere in Azerbaijan, that's what I find to be illegitimate and not worth responding to.
Igor Zavalov, this is an interesting moment to speak with you. I mean, here you are a Russian, at the same time a Russian journalist, and Russian journalists have had a very hard time of it in your country when they disagree with an increasingly strong kind of authoritarian central power there. So I wonder how you're hearing all this. Ambassador Pickering and Michael McFaul are essentially putting the weight of this deterioration on your country, Russia. So do you agree with them, or do you see the United States pushing some kind of malign agenda here? Or do you feel free to say what you believe?
Well, first of all, let me start with the observation that today's Russia, of course, not the Soviet Union as it used to be. The Russians enjoy many freedoms. To earn money, to buy property, to own their own houses, to travel, and they like it very much.
They've also got dead journalists who spoke up against government policy.
Absolutely. There are serious difficulties in this area, and especially control over the Russian television. This is a matter of concern, certainly. We have a variety of printed newspapers, and of course, internet is free. But at the same time, well, the trend is not, well, that I wholly approve of. At the same time, many Russians support what Putin does and see it as an attempt to consolidate the Russian nationhood and strengthen the Russian state, because what is perceived the era of democracy in Russia in the West, namely the 90s, is perceived as a period of chaos, a period of attempt to democratize the country without strong institutions.
So when Putin calls the United States an imperialist power, compares it to Nazi Germany, are Russians applauding these days? And what does that portend for this relationship if they are?
So first of all, he didn't compare it directly. There was a hidden, well,
it was, it wasn't that subtle, though. It was pretty clear, pretty clear.
I have a different point on that. I see it differently a little bit.
Okay.
Well, but at the same time, this standing up to American predominance in the world is supported by a majority of Russians.
Ambassador Pickering, you've described a hopeful scenario that could come out of this with serious, large-scale new negotiations about nuclear arsenals and all the rest, but are you really hopeful that will happen? It does not seem to be the tenor, even today, as these two leaders meet.
No, I agree with you, Tom. I think we have to be realistic about that. I don't think that that should destroy, basically, the importance of the opportunity. We recently, it was mentioned on the program, the article that Secretary Shultz and Secretary Kissinger and Senator Nunn and others, and Bill Perry, wrote about the long-term removal of nuclear weapons. I'm obviously in the long-term hopeful that can be done, and it's an important objective, and it should continue to be something we can move ahead. It may be that we'll need the change in both countries that future elections over the next year portend, that is, in Russia and the United States, before we can come back to come to grips with this issue. And, of course, it worries me a great deal that we now may see a further period of disintegration where it is much harder, that in fact, rather than stop digging the hole deeper, we're going to continue to dig the hole deeper for a few more years before we realize, in fact, that there opportunities and the challenges are much more serious and need to be taken into account, and that's the role of leaders.
Well, for now, it's back to the future, and the language isn't pretty. Ambassador Thomas Pickering, we're very grateful to you for being with us today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Michael McFaul at the Hoover Institution, always wonderful having you. Thank you very much, Professor McFaul, for being
here. Thank you.
And Igor Zavilov with RIA Novosti, the Russian News and Information Agency in Washington. Igor, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.